The other week, there was a strange scene playing out just around the corner from our offices here in Toronto. But four or five women were standing on a downtown street corner trying to inflate something that looked like a giant red balloon. But they were struggling with it.
It says it does it by itself, right?
Yeah. It says people help you, but it's not necessary.
It doesn't sound like it.
There's two large openings.
This is the craziest thing I've seen. Yeah.
Our reporter, Cherie Suturin, and our editor-in-chief, Karen Pugliese, watched this scene unfold. They tell me it was actually a flimsy blow-up mattress with the name of a vodka brand written across it in giant letters.
See, they've got them all?
Yeah.
And they're mattresses.
It says Smirnoff on them, which is hilarious.
Like the vodka?
Yeah.
The women were referring to an instruction sheet and then a YouTube video, but they still seemed confused.
Instructions. It just gave us this paper here and didn't say a lot.
It's really not descriptive.
So, no, it isn't. So, yes.
It's like worse than IKEA.
Definitely. Yeah, this is definitely worse than IKEA.
Frustrated, one of them decides to try something different. She holds the deflated mattress open over her head and tries to fill it up by running down the busy sidewalk and waving it from side to side.
Yeah, look, it is working. It's working. It's working, guys. It's working.
She got it.
It's working.
Okay, I need more, but it's coming. No, but I have to keep going from side to side to keep filling it. Yeah.
Is it okay?
Is it good? Okay?
Yeah.
It's good,
okay,
right?
There you go. We figured it out.
Okay. Let's do some more.
This actually works. Success. But then when another woman tries to sit on the mattress, it collapses in the middle. And she rolls to the ground. There are 10 more to go. And on the sidewalk, outside of 129 Peter Street, those 10 flimsy air mattresses were what a group of people were depending on for a decent night's sleep.
They were donated to us, so we just got as many as we could so that they're not on the floor.
So are you volunteers?
Yeah, we're just doing it.
This scene that I'm painting for you, this sad half-inflated mattress, people on the sidewalk waiting to sleep on the streets, the job not getting done well enough on one mattress when there's 10 more mattresses. The people waiting to sleep on those mattresses are refugees. And the scene that played out is a symbol of a much bigger story. It's a symbol of Canada's attempts to address an alarming influx of refugees. The whole thing appears to be a chaos of donations, volunteer efforts, politicians, religious groups, and a meager pot of government funding. Here's what happened. Up until June, Toronto's shelter system would accept asylum seekers, in addition to unhoused Canadians. But the number of refugees who are making use of the shelter system has been exploding.
Over the past 20 months, the number of asylum seekers in Toronto's shelter system has multiplied by more than 500%. From a low of about 530 people per night in September 2021 to over 2,800 in May 2023. We are asking the federal government to provide Toronto with the same financial considerations as other municipalities, such as Peel and Niagara, where it funds and operates refugees and asylum seeker-specific hotels.
And this past June, the city said, that's enough. We can't do this anymore. The deputy mayor decided that they would no longer accept asylum seekers in many Toronto city shelters. The hope was that by putting these people out onto the streets, they would increase the pressure on the federal government. And so a crowd of refugees, mostly from Africa, ended up sleeping outside the shelter office at a busy intersection night after night. A couple of churches stepped in to provide a place to sleep. But soon those two began to overflow. And yet the strategy worked. The federal government announced $212 million would be going towards helping asylum seekers. And this was followed by new mayor Olivia Chow opening up 250 new shelter spaces. And yet the crowd outside of 129 Peter Street remained. Many did not know where to go, who to call, or who to trust in the chaos. And all that some of them had to sleep on were those randomly donated Smirnoff mattresses assembled on the side of the street by some well-meaning volunteers with the aid of a YouTube video. Our team spent the day and night with those asylum seekers, trying to understand what it is like for them to navigate such a broken system and to try to just find a place to sleep for the night. We're going to join them there. Wait for it.
My name is Mahmoud.
And what's your name?
Mohammed.
We're talking to two friends from Sudan. They're the first people we've met today that didn't run away from our microphones. And they're both carrying small backpacks, like a lot of the people here at the encampment. Karen and I have been curious about what people might be carrying with them from home.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I'm just curious, what have you guys got in your bags? Is that stuff that you brought with you, or did somebody give you stuff? Or?
No, it's we buy it.
You bought it?
Yeah. When we go out from forest, nothing with you. It's all T-shirts.
Mahmoud, the taller one of the pair, opens his jacket to show us a lime green shirt that says Panama with a picture of a toucan. It's like one of those shirts you'd buy from a tourist shop while you're on vacation.
You bought that in Panama?
No, this is an organization. UN give us.
Yeah.
The UN
you give me?
Yes, in a Panama forest.
Yeah, you could.
So maybe not a vacation then.
What was happening in the forest? Where is this?
It's in between Panama and Colombia.
Okay.
It's like when you get to Panama, you have to get this, cross this forest first. Some people going 1 week, 2 weeks, some people 2 days, 3 days, as your body can do. It's a bad situation. It's bad.
In the middle of the forest. How many people were there?
It's like more.
Venezuela, Turkey, Sudan, Africa, more people. Afghanistan.
In the forest?
Huh?
Wow.
For me, I live in the forest 4 days, 3 nights.
What did you eat?
Sometimes biscuit, sometimes tuna.
It's like fasting. It's like fasting.
This forest he's talking about, I've actually heard of it before. It's a border crossing between Colombia and Panama called the Darien Gap. And it goes over mountains, swamps, valleys. It's notorious for being pretty dangerous.
The next day, minds were racing with one question. Will we make it out of here? There were foreboding reminders of those who did not.
They reported losing dozens of people washed away in the current.
A group of 5 to 7 mafias came to us. They pointed a gun towards us and took away our bags and everything. They left nothing for us. They even took away our food.
Last year, hundreds of thousands of migrants actually attempted that crossing, trying to get from places all over the world into North America. And that number is increasing. But how did they get to the Darien Gap from Sudan?
How many countries did it take you to get here?
11 countries. Start from Sudan to Egypt. And after I go to Egypt, I go to Turkish, Ecuador, Colombia, Panama,
forest.
Darien Forest. After Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua. Nicaragua,
Honduras,
Guatemala, Mexico, America, Canada.
How did you get here from America?
We get by a forest. Work.
Work.
Yeah, work.
Where?
It's like I got this Montreal.
Was this the Roxham Road?
No, not Roxham Road. I'm not sure actually, but we get point in maps and go ahead.
Yeah.
Wow. Since the Safe Third Country Agreement was expanded to close land crossings like Roxham Road, immigration experts have said that asylum seekers are going to try to find hidden, more dangerous paths across the Canada-US border. From the sounds of it, Mahmoud is one of those people.
How did you meet?
Like a Scarborough Station.
Scarborough Station.
Yeah, train station.
How did what connected you?
We are Sudanese, we know each other. Just I can't look you, I know
you
it's yours. Yeah.
I am only nobody Sudanese, only me and him.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
There must be some Sudanese magic joining these two because they actually don't look alike at all. Mohammed is shorter and looks to be of African descent, and Mahmoud is a bit taller and looks like he's of Middle Eastern descent. Mahmoud explained that he'd spent a few nights in the shelters in Toronto, but space was hard to come by, and the substance use going on there made him feel like they weren't really meant to support refugees.
I heard some people were taken to a church, that some people in the community stepped in to the church that they are staying at. Did you hear about the church?
Some organization is like, give us over, can come and stay 2 days, 3 days, but it's not a solution.
Where have you been sleeping?
Yeah, I sleep in the park and the station, in the metro. Sometimes I sleep near the mosque. Sometimes I sleep near the bank for subway, subway, near this shop. I sleep there. Any corner, safety. Night, but if you don't see somebody from homies and like that, I sleeping. Right. With it like that,
right. Wow.
Sleep.
Wow.
It's easy, no problem. But it's not good for this country. This is Canada. You know the Canada's big country. Any, it's good country. But
Mahmoud and Mohammed are leaving. They want to go find food they can eat, and they say they're going to find a place to sleep for the night. Maybe in a park somewhere.
Are you going somewhere right now?
I will go to try and get some food, halal food. You know, I'm Muslim. I can't eat this food. Come back.
So you're going to come back?
Yeah.
Okay.
When you sit here,
we walk around the camp hoping to talk to other people and meet a guy named Peter from Kenya. He's got a boombox. Peter doesn't want to answer our questions. What he does want to do is dance.
Hey.
By the way, that was fun dancing.
That was fun! Like, he was a vibe.
Yeah. It's like we learned how to reggae.
We learned how to reggae dance. You clearly have more of a beat than I do, though.
And though he's open to dancing, Peter is still not willing to talk, like most of the people we're meeting here. We're getting bits and pieces of people's life stories before they stop themselves and ask if we're recording. And a lot of them aren't nearly as jovial as Peter is.
It's been kind of hard to get other people to talk to us.
To me, the most surprising thing was two women we talked to who both said they've been there for a month. Mm-hmm. I think one was from Uganda and one was from Cameroon.
Yeah. And I mean, the woman who was talking to us, I wish she would have gone on the mic. Like, she was clearly really pissed off. She kept saying, please don't take my picture. And we're saying, no, we don't have cameras. Like, we're not taking your picture. And she was kind of hiding her face because she seemed to be really worried about it. She was so upset. Like, she was saying, like, we asked her where you sleep, and she points and she goes, right over there. And it's just like where there's these like bags and everything up against the wall. What else did she say when you were talking to her?
I think to me it was just like the frustration. Like, I do feel like she wanted to talk to us, but she was also like preventing herself from doing so. Every once in a while she would kind of like turn towards us and say something like, no one's helping us. I've been here for a month, I've been waiting. And I think her friend was like nodding, being like, yeah, same thing.
While talking to Karen, I look up and I notice a couple of new groups have arrived in the encampment. One is giving out water bottles and blankets. Good Samaritans. I also recognize local MP Kevin Vuong in the crowd. He's flanked by a few people carrying clipboards, and they seem to be going around asking people questions.
I see you signing people up on clipboards. What is that? What are you doing?
So that's getting their information for us to be able to advocate on their behalf with the Department of Immigration. That on the front page, it asks for what we need. It takes a little bit of time for each individual because, you know, we have to explain kind of what the entire process. They want to be able to get their refugee status and work permit to be able to work in this country.
Right.
And so we are helping them to advocate and get them information status updates on that.
Right. And how long would it take to get a work permit at this point?
Right now, the timeline for work permits for refugees is 3 to 4 months. It is my hope that both because of my work with conversation with the minister And the departmental contact that he's provided me in my office, that we're able to speed that up and get that much quicker.
If you're helping certain folks being sped up, is that fair for other folks?
Well, I'm here for, you know, the people at 129 Peter Street and everyone, new people are arriving every day. So I'm going to continue to be here every day. I think we have to be realistic here. Obviously, I would love to go around across the city, find everyone who is in need of help, get their information and do that, but my team and I can only do so much.
MPs like Vuong don't oversee shelters, so one of the things that they can do is advocate for individuals on things such as work permits. But I'm left wondering how many folks there are that might not actually know Vuong's team is here. It's 10 o'clock now and getting darker out. A car pulls up with more supplies and a couple new people.
We're seeing a car pull up. It's like a white car, and they seem to be taking bottles of water and other kinds of drinks out.
Hi, I'm so sorry. My name is Charisse. We're journalists. We're from a podcast called Canadaland.
Okay.
And
that's you I spoke to earlier. I just was too busy.
Oh, okay. That's great. Great. Good to meet you. Good to meet you.
You're not working?
That's Kizito Musabimana from the Rwandan-Canadian Healing Center. He's been helping organize these church shelters, and we had spoken on the phone earlier that day. But our conversation is cut short by a few volunteers needing his help to unload their cars. So I start talking to one of them. She says she's not affiliated with any group, but has been cooking meals at home and bringing them here most evenings. Tonight, it's some sort of rice dish with a red sauce.
I'm just helping. I'm here on behalf of my organization. I'm just doing this. Yeah, like I cook every day, but...
There's a lot of that going on at 129 Peter Street. Random individuals and groups showing up with food, water, blankets, air mattresses. Suddenly, a big yellow school bus pulls up on the curb. I'm guessing this is the bus that takes folks to the church shelter north of the city. But no one's really making a move to get on the bus. Kizito comes over. This time he's holding a clipboard and looking stressed. He tells me the asylum seekers don't want to get on. They don't want to go to the church shelter at all, because someone's been telling them not to go.
So are you trying to get people on the bus now? Is that what's up?
Yeah. So we're having an issue right now with some of the people because we have some characters that come here and they're talking to them about staying here on the street. That's how they're going to get help. Unfortunately, some of them are listening to that. Of course, these people have been traumatized. And
right.
It's just ridiculous.
Kizito explains there are people spreading what he calls rumors about how asylum seekers will give up their place in line for housing if they go to the church shelters. There are also rumors they're going to be forced to convert to Christianity. He's frustrated because it's not just the rumors, it's everything going on this week.
We have other groups that are helping. A lot of the support we are getting to maintain the church operation is not just black communities. Of course, most of it is black community. We are getting donations every day. So honestly, I think the support is coming from everybody. The frustration, my behavior on us, and of course the fact that we see Africans here, like there is probably a couple of people that are not African, but everybody else is African.
I was curious about that. Why exactly is everyone here African? And why aren't there asylum seekers from other places like Ukraine?
It's a lot of different things, you know. It's the fact that our community is not well equipped. There is not enough resources for our community to kind of spread around. Like if you look at, for example, the Ethiopian community, as I was just showing you, which is well positioned, they can come as individuals and take their people. The Ugandans did their best, but the numbers are just heavy. So that's how you have the rest of the people sleeping on the street. So systemically, definitely racism. On an individual level, I wouldn't say so. But systemically, definitely, there is some racism. Because if we can do what we've done for the Ukrainians and the Syrians and, you know, the Afghans, but yet our people are here.
The same week that happened, the press conference, I think, was when they made the Ukrainians that sort of PR.
Oh, yeah. They express visa entry. I personally just want them to do for us as they're doing for everybody. That's what I want to see. I don't think this government has done that, especially the city of Toronto, but of course the federal government. And of course, we are happy with the new mayor and the fact that she seems to be very encouraged and encouraging, and she's taking action from day one. So we are continuing, and we're going to continue to push that they bring in more programs wrap around. $97 million is not going to do it. $160 million is not going to do it. We need more than that.
Kizito and the other volunteers start milling around the crowd, trying to convince some of the asylum seekers that they will be safe at the church shelter. The yellow bus is still empty.
I gotta say, though, it's like great that community is stepping up, but crazy that like a lot of these folks' day-to-day food and shelter is being just kind of haphazardly given by the community instead of actually being organized by the government. But yeah,
like the two guys who spoke to, like they need halal food, and we're just like, okay, how are you going to get that? And they're like, well, you know, if we go out, like even if you don't have money, somebody knows, they understand, they give it to you. But like to be dependent on that?
Yeah, it must feel really strange.
It must feel like horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. Like nobody wants to be like dependent.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I'm curious about, based on what we heard earlier, is if anybody's, like if some people are going to stay or if people are actually going to get on the bus.
Kizito and his crew managed to convince about 20 people to come to the church. There's space on the bus for me and Karen, so we hop along for the ride. It's now about 11:30 p.m. and we're heading north.
It's rough.
Kizito and another organizer are standing up at the front of the bus giving instructions and clarifying that they are not trying to convert people.
Some things to consider, because we heard these questions. Anyone who was there can practice anything, so there's not going to be a connection of forcing to any particular religion if folks are non-religious, right? I just wanted to let folks know that.
The mood is good, all things considered. We're sitting next to a young man named John. He was watching us dance earlier.
Shakira, Shakira.
Shakira, Shakira.
Wow.
Are we going to sing? Sing.
Okay. Oh, baby, I got a oh, baby. I tell you something. Oh, baby, you're the everything I have. Oh, coo-coo-coo-coo-coo-coo. This man, there is a lot of fun. Oh my God.
You hear that sound? If I open the door, the bus make a lot of noise. I can't open the door with that.
Okay.
Eventually, John falls asleep, like a lot of people on the bus. But not for long.
It's midnight. Hey, John? Are you tired?
I'm fine.
You're fine?
Yeah.
Did you get a good sleep there?
Yeah, I'm going to sleep, yeah.
What time do you have to get up in the morning?
I think maybe 8 or 9.
So you're only going to get like a few hours sleep. Are you going to get something to eat or just go to bed?
This night. I don't think so, but if I see anything I can still take, yeah, that would be okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Shakira, Shakira.
Shakira, Shakira.
Shakira. Yeah.
We pull up to Dominion Church International Toronto in what looks like a block of warehouses on a dark stretch of road. Inside, there's a bright open room where about 30 to 40 asylum seekers are lounging on a hodgepodge of chairs and bedding. Lots of them were using chairs pushed together to form a sort of makeshift bed, while others were sleeping on cots or bags on the floor. We meet Pastor Eddie, who's running things around here. He looks tired. More cars pull up, dropping off more asylum seekers.
You have the beds now?
No, they haven't told us anything. They've just dropped in other three people now.
Oh, they were dropping off people?
Yes.
That's a funny joke. I thought they were bringing supplies.
No.
Nice.
I ask Eddie if the church is getting any funding from the government to run this operation.
Not yet.
From the government anything?
Not yet.
Not yet, but we have been told that it will be coming as to how it will be channeled. We are going to learn of that.
Then Eddie says he has someone he wants us to talk to. A woman called Aunt Faith.
You want me to yell out someone? To call out someone?
Sure,
someone?
If you know anyone.
Okay. This lady. Aunt Faith.
Yes, please.
Can you come for a second?
I've been here since Monday. And it has been a blessing being here. Because when I came to Canada, I didn't know where I would be. And we were all stranded. We didn't know where to go because the shelters were full. There was no response to those who were coming in. And so the church opened up for us to come in. And so since we have been here, we have been looked after. We have been fed. We have been given food. We have been given drinks. We get breakfast, get lunch, and get supper. And then they have provided us with beddings, clothes, all the necessities that we need. And so they have made us feel comfortable. They have showed us love. I am overwhelmed. You see people coming in of different walks of life, and you are amazed.
Aunt Faith tells us she fled from Uganda.
I'm a human rights defender. That's my work. I'm a social worker and I'm a human rights defender. So in my work, in one way or the other, I have rubbed wrongly with the government, yes, in my line of work.
What type of work?
She escaped her home country and first went to Ottawa.
Now, when I came in, I went to Ottawa. So when I went to the capital city, I told them I needed to go to immigration. So when I went to immigration, someone was directing me. They told me, no, you need to go to a shelter. So when they took me to a male shelter. And the male shelter couldn't handle me, so they contacted a female shelter. Now, being new to Canada, I didn't know my way around. The people who would see me would say, lady, you won't survive in that shelter. So I kept on moving up and down the streets. So I think this lady was parked somewhere and she kept on looking at me moving up and down. And I think she was concerned. So she asked me what was going on, and then I told her, I said, okay, I'll take you in for two nights. That was overwhelming. And she has followed me up, and I had cash. I didn't know that. I didn't have a visa. My visa card, Ugandan visa card, couldn't work here. She used her visa card to make sure I get meals, to make sure that I move from Ottawa to here. Oh, it was...
It sounds overwhelming.
Yes, but I think I believe in God.
As crazy as that story is, it seems like kind strangers reaching out to support stranded refugees has been a bit of a theme tonight. We wanted to see where Aunt Faith was sleeping tonight.
Can you take us on a little tour?
Yeah. The males go the other side.
Okay, yeah.
We have a kitchen and we have a microwave.
Oh, you have a kitchen. Okay,
yeah,
that's great.
We have a microwave here. We have another microwave inside there. So we warm our food stuff
nice.
In there. We wash our plates here. Mm-hmm. This is the kitchen. So we utilize the kitchen here. And then the washrooms, this is for ladies. You can see.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so we are comfortable.
Yeah. And you have a shower.
Yes, we have a shower. We have soap. We have all the things that we enough toilet paper and all that. So we are okay.
Yeah, it's a big space.
Yeah, it is. It is. And they keep it clean.
So. It's bigger. Like the whole area is bigger than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because they were saying it's a church, but it's like a big.
Yeah, it is. Space. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing.
Mm-hmm, it is.
And I know they are expecting 30 more people. And many other people have come and gone. And everybody has been catered for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Pastor Eddie?
Yes. The first time I came, he welcomed us. He prayed for us. We were together. And he comes. That night he didn't go home. But then they all come. They work in shifts. So the members, I think some are staff members, so they come and work in shifts. So every day we have, throughout the night, we have two people who are there attending to us, and they do not sleep. It's amazing.
Aunt Faith shows us her bed. It's a small mattress on the ground, surrounded by the backs of four or five chairs, creating a kind of makeshift room in this huge church hall. And she's grateful for it. There's no doubt about that. But it's also clear this is not a permanent solution. It can't be.